This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hour number three as we roll along here on Wake Up Call. Thanks for joining us. All right, we're going to get into the Kyler Murray Arizona Cardinals situation later on in the show. There is news yesterday that Derek Jeter is stepping down as CEO of the Marlins. It's a mutually parting of the ways. Whoever wanted it first, we have no idea. But the reports are that Jeter, who's been about four or five years in the front office of the Marlins running the team, did not like the direction that the team was going to be going, that they wanted to spend $10 to $15 million more on payroll. The Marlins didn't want to do that, and there was two schools of thought, and Jeter is walking away. Did Jeter do some good things with the Marlins? A little bit. He got the Giancarlo Stanton money off the books, which is what the team really wanted him to do. But overall, I don't think it was a home run bringing Derek Jeter on board as an owner. He had 4% of the team, and then later on as a CEO. I don't think those, you know, it's always difficult to hire former athletes in the front office situation. Some work, there's no doubt. I mean, Ozzie Newsome is one of the best general managers in football. Some work, but some don't. And the reason some don't is because you think like a player first and not necessarily a businessman second, which brings me full circle into why Major League Baseball is in a mess to begin with. There's a lot of business people who are running these teams that made money doing something else with their life. There's not a lot of deeply entrenched Major League Baseball owners like you see in football, like the Mara family, the Rooneys, the Hunts, teams that have owned football for a long period of time, generations. There's a lot of new money in baseball. There's a lot of teams who are owned by people who made money doing something else, and they take that same approach into this investment, you know, as well. Jeter comes from something completely opposite. Jeter is not making millions of dollars owning and running businesses. He made millions of dollars being a player and endorsing products. And then when he comes into the business world of baseball, he brings in some of those biases with him. I'm not going to say that Jeter struck out in his time with the Marlins. No, there are some things he did that the team needed to be done, and he was able to get them through. The Giancarlo Stanton contract was an albatross they had to get rid of, and he did. But he didn't change the Marlins around, and I don't think the $10 to $15 million that he wanted to pay the players more was going to do that either. All right, coming up as we continue, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Again, more on the Kyler Murray Arizona Cardinals situation as we roll along at Hour 3.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, Mike Rutherford's going to join us coming up at 40 past the hour. Big X Sports Radio 1450. Also covers the Louisville Cardinals. We'll get an idea of college basketball. By the way, it's conference tournament week, but it's like there's an asterisk there. Like there are some conferences that are going into tournament week, but next week is the bigger one. So, like, you have the OVC is in Evansville, Indiana. The Missouri Valley is in St. Louis, I believe. You got the Summit League in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So there's a couple of more. I think the Sun Belt plays this week in Pensacola, Florida, which is a good one. Sun Belt can be fun. But some of the mid-majors are in conference tournament week right now.
It's all the win and you're in.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of those are in place. Yeah, exactly. SoCon tournament will be in Asheville, North Carolina. That's where Chattanooga leads the SoCon. They have a chance to win that and get in. I always feel a little bad because there are some teams that go into this. Belmont here in Nashville, where I live, has always been one of these teams where they're really good. Great record, some good wins, but not quite good enough. And they lose, they may be favorites or whatever, but they lose and then they don't get to go to the tournament, and it's because they're in a mid-major. If they had the same record with a couple of more quad one wins, in the ACC, they would go, but because they're in these conferences where they're probably only going to get one invite, and you better be winning that conference tournament, because if you don't, you're up against that's the problem with this. Well, it's not the problem. I don't want to over-exaggerate it here, but one of the issues with this tournament is, yeah, there are 68 slots, and I know you've heard me complain that if you don't get in one of these things, I don't want to hear you complain, but the reality of it is, you know, it's not 68 best teams, right? There are 30-plus slots that are automatic to teams that may have had great seasons and won their conference tournament. And then there are others who didn't have a very good season and won their conference tournament because they got hot at the right time, and they get to go dancing. And a team that has 23 wins, 24 wins, they don't get to go because there's not going to be enough room for them when you put their resume up against the other 30-plus teams that are vying for at-large bids. And that's the way it is. So if you're Chattanooga, let's say, and you're just beating up on the Citadel and Wofford and Furman and East Tennessee State and everyone else in the Samford and everybody else in the SoCon, and let's say you don't win that conference and you have a good record, you know, whatever, good players, good record, but you don't win the SoCon tournament. So now your resume has to stack up against everybody in the ACC that didn't win, everybody in the Big Ten that didn't win, everybody in the Big 12 that didn't win, everybody in the Pac-12 that didn't win, right? That's the problem. So you're not going to be one of the 30 plus teams of the at large if you don't win your conference tournament. Now people say, well, there's too much emphasis on the conference tournament. It shouldn't be an automatic invite. Good luck with that. Good luck with that, because I'm telling you right now, it's one of the only reasons these conference tournaments are entertaining. I mean, I'm sorry, but if you're the Sun Belt, you're only going to get Sun Belt people. And then after a while, the teams disappear, right? Like, everybody's all excited on day one, day two, right? And then by the time you get to the end, a lot of fan bases are leaving. But if there's an attachment to the tournament in that moment, then it becomes interesting for people to say, all right, my team, Coastal Carolina, didn't win the Sun Belt tournament, but I wonder if Arkansas State will get in, right? Or I wonder if Troy will get in, whatever, you know, whoever it is. That's the part of the lore of it. I don't know how many times, like, I've been to a number of SEC conference tournaments, and Kentucky's always the king, right? But I always go with the idea that maybe, just maybe, another team will knock Kentucky off. Now, Kentucky will get an automatic bid, of course. But I always wonder if it going to be somebody else that gets an automatic bid? Somebody from the SEC that may not have gotten a bid. By the way, SEC basketball is great. It's great. I know, because I've watched it for years and years and years, where I'm not kidding when I tell you it was unwatchable basketball for a long time. Did you see any of the video of the Arkansas restaurant on Saturday night?
No, not the restaurant.
Yeah, I'll tell you. So I'll give you. So I saw this video on Twitter. So John Calipari was they lost in Fayetteville to Arkansas over the weekend. They went to a restaurant, and he's in his Kentucky gear with his coaches. It almost simultaneously, I don't know how they did it, but almost simultaneously, everybody in the restaurant did the pig suey chant to John Calipari while he was eating, and he was laughing, and, you know, he was clapping them, and he's like, you know, you guys, yeah, you got Calipari's a good sport about that stuff too, man. He gets it. He that's why I think he likes being at Kentucky.
He knows he's got to have a big target on
his
back.
He's got the target, and when you slay the target, he'll give you credit for slaying the target. But he had a good time. I would have bought everybody in the restaurant their meal if I was him. I would have said, you know what? Give me the manager. I want everybody's tab here paid for. Everybody's tab. Yeah, I'm going to take care of everybody here. That was a good-natured fun, a lot of blast. He had a good time with it. And Calipari's a good heart with that. But SEC basketball right now, Auburn is good. Tennessee is really good. But by the way, real quick, all of these teams are really good at home. Like, really good at home. They have great, unbeaten records at home. I have no idea if that bodes well for neutral sites against better competition. I don't know. But Auburn, Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas is outstanding. Arkansas, if Eric Musselman lets me down, man, I'm going to be so disappointed, because I like Musselman. Remember when he came on a show just right after COVID? We had him on it was right after the SEC tournament, where we talked to him about what it was like to be in Nashville. I said, walk us through it. And he was so good to come on with us to talk. He didn't know what was going on. The tournament was getting canceled, but he was like, our players were there, and we didn't know what was. He really gave us a good insight. But if he's got a great basketball team, and I'm almost afraid for them, because they could be out in the second round too. Like, they're really, really fun to watch. But there's a lot of good basketball going on in the SEC right now, and I'm happy for it. I'll give you a real quick.
Because for years I remember that one time where I think it was Alabama, an Alabama team made a deep run.
Yeah.
And we're just like, this doesn't feel right.
It doesn't feel right, yeah. And Alabama's in the top 25, too, with Nate Oates.
Yeah.
He's done a great job, too. I'll just give you a quick, for those of you who are outside of the SEC territory, and if you're in, you kind of know this. There's been a push over the last, I want to say, 10 years, but maybe even longer, of really putting a lot of financial effort into the basketball programs at these schools. There, you know, so much of the money goes to football and so much money in upgrading the facilities. A lot of these programs were suffering a little bit on the back end when it came to basketball, right? The football, I mean, my God, is like, you know, laser treatments and, you know, I mean, cryotherapy machines and all this stuff and a workout locker rooms filled with TVs. But basketball was suffering a bit. And then these schools all kind of almost at once said, look, there's no reason why our conference has to be Kentucky and Florida, that, you know, maybe Nolan Richardson at Arkansas. Like, we don't have to have just like one team that is good. We could have five or six or seven teams that are in the top 25. We can be like the ACC. We can be like the Big Ten. And they knew it was going to be a long haul, so they put a lot more effort into upgrading the facilities and putting a lot more money into making sure that they could keep coaches, because you could coach in an SEC school and leave for another job. I don't want to be at a football school. I want to be at a basketball school, and you would leave for another gig, and you knew where the bread was buttered, so to speak. And what, you know, look, the bread is buttered in football in a lot of these schools, most of these schools, but you, for years and years and years, if you coached at Tennessee, it was like, man, men's hoops, whatever. Now Rick Barnes has got a program where that right now is the thing Tennessee is known for. It's not known for its football program. That's coming, but under Josh Heupel. But the program right now hasn't been in the top 25 since, I think, day one of the polls. You know, Kentucky, they've got an up and coming good SEC football team, but that's a basketball school. And there's these other schools are saying, yes, we may be good at football, but we can keep coaches. We can get good recruits. We can get guys to come here. And it's been working so far. It's been working. It's not Duke. It's not Duke, North Carolina, and the rich history like that. That's not been the case. Every now and then, a school pops up and disappears. That's just the nature of it. But it's done very well as a conference. So, but still, the same conferences have got strong talent. The Big 12 is pretty deep. Big 10 is pretty good. ACC's got some, teams. But the SEC has been coming along nicely over the last couple of years. Again, Mike Rutherford's going to join us to talk a lot of college football, college basketball, coming up at 40 past the hour from Louisville. Big X Sports Radio 1450. We'll talk college hoops with him coming up. All right, again, I want to get into more thoughts on the Kyler Murray Arizona Cardinals situation when we return on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. So I've been talking on the show today about news that happened yesterday with the release of a sort of a letter.
Book.
A book is a better way to put it, yeah. A huge... Oh, my God. Again, why say 10 words when 10,000 will do just fine, right?
Exactly.
My goodness. This statement from Kyler Murray's agent, Eric Burkhardt, who put out a letter to Eric, to the Cardinals, but then leaked it on purpose so that we all could read it, basically saying that Kyler Murray, here's two things you need to know about Kyler Murray, Ron Culver.
All right,
one, he absolutely wants to be an Arizona Cardinal long term.
Who doesn't?
Right? Who doesn't? Two, he desperately wants to win a Super Bowl. He doesn't want to win a Super Bowl. He desperately wants to win a Super Bowl.
You know what? I mean, that puts him above everyone else who just wants to win a Super Bowl.
Right. Because if I'm a quarterback and I go, well, holy cow, he desperately wants to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Holy cow. That's a little bit more
what's
more
the next
dedicated
guy gonna
than
say?
I am. Exactly. Like, are we going to start saying what we would give up to win a Super Bowl?
I mean, Can you imagine a quarterback gets traded? Say Jimmy Garoppolo gets traded to the Buccaneers, right? Because, you know, that rumor's been floating around out there. He stands up at the podium and goes, yeah, I really want to win a Super Bowl. And the reporter, you know, there's a reporter who goes, you're not desperate to win one?
Are you desperate to win one?
Mm.
Seems to be a quarterback in Arizona that's desperate.
Should have traded for the other guy. He's desperate to win one. You just like want to.
It's like in that movie, A Few Good Men. Your Honor, I object. Overruled. I strongly object. Oh, well then, absolutely. Right? I want to win a Super Bowl. You do? Well, I desperately want. Well, then let's just get this done.
Let's do it.
Let's do this deal. Oh, my goodness gracious. This thing is like forever.
All right. Here's my thinking. I know he's a fast riser. He's an up-and-coming star in this league.
I got you.
Does he deserve a raise in his contract now?
That's a great question. It's a great question. If I'm the Cardinals, there is zero reason to do this.
Yeah.
Zero.
What has he done?
No, you do not have to do this now. Look, they can scrub social media. They can say, oh, I'm taking all your images up. Do it. You're not going anywhere.
By the way, I know you said this at the beginning of the show, and I can't agree with you more. I desperately agree with you. That is the lamest thing I have ever seen.
So
these stars to do now, these athletes to do.
Stop it. It's immature. It's stupid. It's really, really stupid. Just look. It's business. Just go in and do business. Don't do this thing where you're sending clues. And then my criticism of him is after he did it, he went, oh, no, that's you guys. You guys care about this.
Yeah.
No. You apparently do too, Mr. Scrub Arizona from all my social media accounts.
Yeah, why do it?
Why do it?
I mean, the only reason why you're doing it is hoping that people will notice.
Right.
If I do it today... And I scrub all, you know, I scrub everything and just leave like two photos up on my social media. No one's going to care.
No, right.
I'm not in the limelight. No one's going to look at me like, oh, my God.
He
got rid of Wake Up Call in his bio.
You want people to pay attention. If you're Kyler Murray, you want people to be questioning this, wondering this, because as they have clearly shown, they are playing the public game for this. Right. This is what they're doing. They're releasing this letter out to Adam Schefter, who's going to send it out everywhere. Right. They're going to play off of the fans who want to solidify the quarterback situation. But they also want to touch onto the fans that there's a possibility Kyler won't be playing here if the Cardinals don't act correctly. Right. So they want to play into that sort of fear. Remember, this is an organization that drafted Josh Rosen in the first round and gave him up 1 year later to get this guy. So you want to hit a home run with him, right? You want to, not that Josh Rosen was going to be a home run, but you want the fan base to say, we know what we're doing in evaluating quarterbacks. The first guy, okay, he didn't quite work out, but we got it right the second time. We made good on it, right? We got a new coach and we got a new quarterback. So this, we are all in, but there's no reason for Arizona to do this yet. And as I said earlier, look, if you're Kyler Murray and his agent, of course you play this game. Of course, Kyler Murray should not be sitting in his house saying to his agent, well, I haven't won a Super Bowl yet, so I shouldn't be getting paid. No, get paid if you can get paid. It doesn't matter. Just get paid, get that long-term deal if you can get it. It's how you go about doing it that I wonder if he's hurting himself with the Cardinals by acting in this manner. The Cardinals have said they'd like to get a deal done. They just may not want to do it now. And Murray is saying, well, there's no time like the present because I could get hurt and that's going to affect my long-term future. But if I'm the Cardinals, I go, well, that's part of the deal.
If I'm the Cardinals, I'm going, yeah, but here's why we're not doing it. Deshaun Watson.
Right.
Because Deshaun Watson got an extension before his deal was up. I think they even had like 2 years left on his deal. And they gave him a huge, huge raise. You know, all the money. And he played out that season. And then immediately when that season was over, that's when all the drama hit.
Sure.
He wanted a seat at the table for the next head coach or the general manager. And then we find out all these allegations on the side. And now we're at a point where the Texans may just be forced to release him.
But also think about it from Arizona's standpoint, right? When is the best time to have everything together to make a Super Bowl run. When your quarterback is eating up a good portion of your salary cap, no. It doesn't mean you can't win a Super Bowl. As I said earlier, of course you can win a Super Bowl when you're paying your quarterback $40 million a year. Of course you can. But is it better that he's on a deal that allows you to get a wide receiver signed, an offensive lineman signed, a defensive end signed, a safety? Is it better when it's like that? Yes. It does. It's not a guarantee of success, but it's better. If you're the Cardinals and you don't have to put $40 million into your quarterback, don't until you absolutely have to. Right? Because you can build up a team around him and then reshape it down the road when you do finally sign Kyler Murray to a deal where you can manipulate the money a little bit to make it friendly. Right? Look, all those years Brady won Super Bowls in New England, right? What was the number one thing people kept saying about Brady's contract? It was team friendly. Look, when your quarterback's making a lot of money, it is very, very difficult to put really good pieces around that individual when he's eating a lot of the cap.
You got to catch lightning in a bottle.
You got to catch Patrick Mahomes at the right time. You got to catch Russell Wilson at the right time. You got to catch Brady on deals that are favorable to the team instead of making $50 million, which is what he deserves. Look at what the Green Bay Packers are going to do with Aaron Rodgers. They want him, but it may mean other people can't be on the team if he's on there for $45 million a year or whatever he's going to get.
Well, what's been the talking point about the Chiefs so recently?
Right.
You know, Patrick Mahomes, what, he's getting $500
million?
And exactly. Every single offseason we're going, well, do they have enough money to keep Kelsey and Tyreek Hill? I mean,
so again, if you're a team that's got a guy on a rookie contract that's playing at a level to get you into the playoffs, you try to keep that, you try to roll with that as long as you can until you do have to buckle down and say, all right, fine, we're going to get an extension with you. We're going to get a deal. We're going to lock you in. Because again, this is a league that doesn't allow young, good quarterbacks to walk away in free agency. It is designed to keep young quarterbacks who are good on the teams that drafted them. That's why the franchise tag exists, and that's why there's a wiggle room of negotiations where you give me a couple of years under rookie deals so I can see how good you are and whether or not we want to build a team around you. Josh Rosen is a perfect example, who I just mentioned. When Arizona drafted him, it was a different coach and a team that was like, that's our guy. But then Cliff Kingsbury's coming in, and they realize that may not be the guy, and we have an opportunity to get somebody else, and they took advantage of it. What was the expense of Josh Rosen? Nothing, right? There's no Sam Bradfords anymore, right? There's no $50 million signing bonuses, right? They don't do that anymore. So you keep a quarterback as low as you possibly can, and there will be a time and a place. For Murray, though, he's worried that the time and a place may mean he's in crutches because he's a dual-threat quarterback. That's what they're worried about. But I'm not faulting Kyler Murray here. Everybody should do it. Everybody should approach it. What I'm criticizing Murray for is I don't think this had to be as public as it has been. I don't think there's two things that I don't think you needed to do here. I don't think you needed to scrub the social media accounts, and I don't think your agent had to send a novel to every single media outlet in the Arizona Cardinals in order to state that you wanted to be there. We know you want to be there.
Maybe his agent secretly wants to be a writer.
Maybe so.
And this is his step into it. It's like, I'm going to write a short essay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Does he do this for all his clients, by the way?
I know. Does he sit there and put out a manifesto for every single one?
Like, what does his next client do? Like, yeah, you only gave me like three sentences.
Right, exactly. Right? I mean, I needed page two of the letter, right? By the way, cool logo for Kyler Murray, though. It's kind of sharp looking. I got to be honest with you. It's kind of nice. But as long as we know, Ron, that he desperately wants to win a Super Bowl, I think all is good.
Yeah.
All is good in the Arizona Cardinal land. But I don't know why you make this public, to be honest with you. I don't think the public sentiment is on his side. I think he's a quarterback that still has stuff to prove. He's got a tremendous upside, but I still think he has stuff to prove. I think the second half of the season, while kind of expected, I don't think we considered Arizona a Super Bowl team. They were really good, but the better teams were getting to. But I don't think the fans are going to be storm the gates of the Cardinal front office to lock him in now. All right, we'll talk to Mike Rutherford, who's going to join us from Louisville. Big X Sports Radio 1450 on college basketball in general as we talk about that, continuing on Wake Up Call.
This
is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Mike Rutherford joins us. Big Zach Sports Radio 1450. Also manager of cardchronicle.com covering Louisville. Talk some college hoops because today is March 1st. Because it's March, we got to get college basketball on our mind. How are you, Mike?
Doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so big picture here. Before we started breaking down some individual conferences, and yes, I know conference tournaments could sway some things and change some things. But overall, when you look at the large pool of teams, is this going to be very difficult for the selection committee, easier than other years in terms of who really is going to get into this thing? Is there a larger pool or a smaller pool?
I think it's kind of par for the course. There's a running joke in college basketball circles where every single year around this time, the phrase historically weak bubble gets tossed around.
Right.
The bubble's never, it's never historically strong. It's not like we're excluding a 30-2 team from the ACC, from the NCAA tournament on a given year. So you always are going to have about the same pool of teams to work with. I think this year maybe it's more notable the big names that are on the bubble. You had North Carolina last night getting a big win that it absolutely had to have over Syracuse. Virginia from the ACC squarely on the bubble. Teams like Oregon that have had success recently, Florida, Indiana, BYU, Memphis, and Penny Hardaway. You've got more intrigue around the bubble this year than I think in years past just because of those names. But as far as the pool of candidates, I think it's going to be about business as usual for the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee in that regard.
All right, let's get to the ACC, and I was looking at some projections, and only I saw one where the only lock is Duke. Is that true? Is Duke the only lock out of the ACC? What about Wake Forest or Notre Dame?
I would say Duke probably the only stone-cold lock right now. Notre Dame certainly seems like a decent bet. Wake Forest seems like a decent bet. I would say after last night, North Carolina seems like a decent bet. But the worst of the worst could still happen. The other two teams that I mentioned besides Carolina still have two regular season games left, and then the ACC tournament next week in Brooklyn. So, you know, if you have a ton of bid stealers out there, if you have, say, you know, a team who's not in the top four out of the West Coast Conference win that tournament, or a team that's not Murray State win the Ohio Valley tournament, those are taking at-large bids away. So if it's those teams that are from the ACC that are on the bubble could, you know, then potentially get pushed out. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to see, you know, Miami's going to be in the field. I think Wake Forest will be in the field. I think Carolina will be in the field. And then maybe one of those other two teams that's kind of flirting with a bid could sneak their way into. At the end of the day, I think you're still going to see four or five bids from the ACC, but it doesn't change the fact that Duke has been really the only team of consequence in that conference pretty much this entire season.
Yeah, God forbid we have Jim Boeheim making a tournament run and getting into this thing.
If it happens, you know exactly how it's going to play
out. You're
right,
no doubt.
They do 11. They're going to second weekend. You know it.
Absolutely. Let's get to the Big 12. And there seems to be a lot of good teams in that conference. Is it as deep as it appears to be?
I think so. I think that you've got strength at the bottom, which is kind of what the Big 12 is, how they've always operated. You've got West Virginia's down. Oklahoma's a little bit down. K-State played well last night, but they're down. And then Oklahoma State, I think, has played pretty well considering their circumstances being banned from the postseason. Those are the only four teams that are just kind of you know, whatever. Everybody else in that league, I think, is very, very good. Even TCU, who's got a losing conference record. Iowa State's been nationally ranked most of this year. They have a losing conference record. After winning just two games last season, they're 20-9, which is a remarkable turnaround job. And then the top of that league is as good as the top of any conference. Baylor, reigning national champions, I think they have as good a chance as just about any champion as we've seen recently to become the first repeat national champion since Florida did it back in 07-08. Kansas is Kansas. You know how good they are. And then Texas Tech and Texas. The Chris Beard feud kind of dominated those headlines. But both those teams, I think, fully capable of making runs to the second weekend of the tournament. Texas Tech has been a big-time surprise story. Texas a little bit underachieving, but we all know what Chris Beard can do in March. So all four of those top teams in the Big 12, I think, are fully capable of playing their way to the final weekend of the season.
Are there conference tournaments that are going on this week from some of the mid-majors that you're interested in because the result may mean a really good team is sweating it out?
Yeah, I think, you know, you had action kicking off last night. We'll have more games being played tonight. But the West Coast Conference, I think, is one to really look at because the top four teams, everybody knows how good Gonzaga is.
Right.
I think after last weekend, most people now know how good St. Mary's is. But you've got two teams right beneath them in San Francisco and BYU that both have chances of getting at-large bids. If one of those two gets knocked off in the quarterfinal round, they could potentially lose a bid. If they win one game, I think both those teams are probably in. But if anybody else in that conference wins, they're knocking somebody out of the tournament. The OVC gets going this week. Murray State has only been beaten twice this season. They're nationally ranked. If they lose to anybody, say, you know, Belmont is a very good team, could definitely knock them off in the conference championship game. That's taking a bit away from somebody else because Belmont is absolutely getting into the field. If you look at Conference USA, which I know is a tournament for next week, North Texas and UAB, probably both in the field. If they don't win those leagues, somebody's getting knocked out. Loyola Chicago from the Missouri Valley, we're familiar with that program coming off a Final Four run a few years ago. They're probably in the tournament regardless of if they win their conference tournament. So these are all the teams that if you're sweating it out of the bubble, you need to be rooting for those teams. Iona, coached by Rick Pitino, I think they're another one. Not a lock if they don't win the MAAC. They could get left out of the field, but they would have a decent chance. So you've got to be rooting for those teams that probably seem like they're in the field regardless to go ahead and take business of the conference tournaments if you want to get in.
As me personally, as a fan of the SEC, I've loved the teams that are coming out of that conference. But I get good teams win at home. But I was really surprised how deep and good the home records are for SEC teams. Does that warrant, I mean, not from the top maybe, but from the middle, does that warrant some neutral court concerns for teams like Tennessee and Alabama and teams like that play so well at home, but maybe on a neutral court, maybe not as good as you think?
Yeah, I think you kind of have to do a case-by-case basis there. I mean, teams that are great at home but awful on the road, there's sort of wild cards when they get to the NCAA tournament. I mean, a team like Arkansas has been – they've been great everywhere for the last couple of months. But historically, they've been almost unbeatable in Bud Walton Arena, even when they've had average teams. And when you've gotten them on a neutral or a straight road environment, they've been bad. I don't think that these teams fit that bill. Like, I think Bama playing their – Bama's biggest issue of being a wild card is just you never know if they're going to make 43s or go 2 of 40 from 3 on a given night. So they can beat anybody in the field. They can lose to anybody in the field. Tennessee I have less concerns about just because I think Rick Barnes is such a stabilizing force, and they have guys that have been there and done that. So I don't know. I think their talent level may keep them from making the second weekend of the tournament, but I don't think their inability to win on the road will really affect them on a neutral. But the SEC is interesting. I think you've got three legitimate national title contenders at the top of that conference, and then everybody else is pretty good, and it's going to come down to, I know this is a March cliche, but matchups, the draw, and a little bit of luck for any of those teams. You can see them winning two or three games.
Yeah, Arkansas is the one team that I get blown away with when I watch them play is Arkansas. I get Kentucky. I've gotten Tennessee. Arkansas is just, I think they're magnificent. I think J.D. Notae is fantastic. Stanley Amudi knocking down threes. I think Musselman's got a great team there.
He does, and they hit the, you know, Musselman was made a name for himself as kind of the transfer god when he was at Nevada, and he hits the jackpot, I think, again this year. Aldis Toney was a fantastic player at Pitt, and that has translated to Arkansas. Jalen Williams has been fantastic for them as well. And the style of play is exciting. Big-time games at Bud Walton Arena, I think that environment is as good as any in college basketball. And then you got Mus taking his shirt off with the arm sling still on. Like, everything about Arkansas is fantastic. They're must-watch television. They are appointment TV, and I think that's going to continue to be the case as we get into the postseason.
Let's have some fun. Any fun mid-major teams, conferences that people aren't paying attention to? South Dakota State out of the Summit. I'm trying to think of a few off the top of my head. But you know what I'm getting at. The ones that make a little noise in March and people go, now, like Oral Roberts last year. Now we know where you are.
I think South Dakota State is a fantastic story. When you look at I think the stat that I saw, because they ran the table in the Summit League. They haven't lost. They take a ton of threes. They're nicknamed the Jackrabbits, for God's sake. You have to love these guys. And they had a stat where if they had missed 80 consecutive threes to end their season last week, they would have still been the three-point percentage leader in that conference. And I think the next highest team in that league would have had to have made 101 consecutive threes to match South Dakota State current average. They are a fantastically exciting team. They get up and down, ton of threes. I think the teams, whoever they play, it's going to kind of remind fans of Eastern Washington last year when they pushed Kansas to the brink with the brothers who are now playing at Arkansas. I think that whoever they play, even if they don't win that first round game, the fans, America's going to fall in love with them just because they're so exciting. And again, Jackrabbits. Who doesn't love the Jackrabbits?
Who doesn't love that? Exactly. Mike Rutherford again, Big X Sports Radio 1450 and at cardchronicle.com on Louisville. Good talking to you, my friend. Let's catch up soon. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. Again, talking some college basketball. I love those schools. I always, this is my time. March is it. You find these types of schools. Northern Iowa out of the Missouri Valley. Missouri State's actually one you want to pay attention to a little bit there. But like you mentioned, South Dakota State. There, you can say Belmont out of the Ohio Valley, but Belmont's been is a consistently good team year in and year out. Murray State is ranked, so if Murray, I don't think Murray State's going to have trouble getting into the tournament. They're 28-2 if they don't win the Ohio Valley Conference. But you look at some other teams, Mid-American Conference. Ohio, I think, is up there. Toledo has had a good season. He mentioned Iona with Rick Pitino. I'm trying to think of some other ones off the top of my head, but a couple of them that are going to be around in the tournament that you probably haven't been paying much attention to. They don't get on TV a lot and whatnot. But then they get to the tournament, and then they win that, like, one game over, like, a 5 seed or a 4 seed, and you're like, oh, there they are. You know, Max Asmus, if you remember him from Oral Roberts last year, was and how good the Golden Eagles were. You know, they were a fun team. Ja Morant, you didn't have to go back that far a while back. Ja Morant and Murray State did kind of the same thing. Right, where they were, you know, where's Murray State for crying out loud? Oh, it's in Kentucky. Look at them. And then Ja Morant was making a name for himself in the tournament. Those kind of schools are fun. I've always understood the argument of 68 best basketball teams, right? And if they all come from the 5 conferences or 6 conferences, so be it. But I think there is a flavor to this tournament that I'm willing to go, you know, I don't necessarily need it. I don't, if a really good... just for example, a really good, I'm trying to think of somebody out of the ACC, for example, that's kind of on the bubble and looking in, or maybe even the Big 12. Like if Oklahoma, it's got a lot of work to do, but let's just put them out there. If they're a good team and they've gone up against Kansas twice and Texas Tech twice and Texas and Baylor, and they don't get in, and yet a Longwood gets in, I'm okay with that. I think there's some flavor to this tournament that allows for it goes against everything in sports where we want our playoffs to be the best of the best of the best. But when it comes to the NCAA tournament, it's like, yeah, we can take all of you conferences. You can take the champions. Let's represent everybody, even if we know they're not as good, because the tournament being a one and done thing allows for all the upsets to occur. It allows for teams to surprise and move on and advance, a Florida Gulf Coast 15 years ago, whatever it is. It allows that because of the nature of basketball, right? Basketball, there's the 3-point shot. You can go on bad runs. You can just, the matchup can be missed. You know, I mean, I know, you know, you talk about all of the upsets that have occurred in the tournament, and we always say shock the world. That's an overused expression. We've had so many shock the worlds that nobody's shocked anymore. We're surprised, maybe pleasantly or not so much, depending on your bracket. But teams don't shock the world anymore. And the reason they don't is because the talent level in college basketball is very spread out, and it's a lot deeper than you think, right? The one McDonald All-American that goes to Duke can be beaten by 4 seniors on at a mid-major school that play really, really, really well together. And we've seen it so many times that no one should be shocked anymore. It's still fun. All right, well, I can wrap up Wake Up Call as we continue on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Right, and thanks to Mike Rutherford for joining us on Progressive Guest Line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get a quote at progressive.com today. All right, so thanks to Mike Rutherford again for some college basketball. It is March, so we might as well follow suit on tournament week and then get into the conference tournaments next week. We should go around the country next week. Talk SEC, Big Ten, ACC. Who am I missing? Pac-12?
Don't we always miss Pac-12?
Of course we do.
Poor Pac-12.
I miss going to conference tournaments. I've been to a number of them. I like it because it's a potpourri of basketball. It's just like a lot of basketball. I'll tell you a funny story. Close out the show. Well, it's not really funny, but it's interesting. For years, the Mountain West Conference, which was formed in 2000, it broke off from the WAC. And when I was living in Las Vegas, their conference tournament was in Las Vegas was at the Thomas and Mack Center. And, you know, Las Vegas is a perfect place to go for a conference tournament, right? It's everybody wants to go. There's fun, gambling, drinking, basketball. Like, it's a cool little vacation. So I moved to Colorado, and a lot of the teams in the Mountain West Conference are based out of Colorado. Air Force, Colorado State, Wyoming, which is over the border. So they're, you know, so the conference decided, you know what? Let's have the conference in Denver. Let's have the conference tournament in Denver. So instead of going to Vegas every year, I just went up the road to the Pepsi Center where the conference tournament was there. And so I started noticing, oh, it doesn't seem to be like a lot of people, a lot more people. And the conference tournament decided too, because they went, yeah, they started doing polls of people, like, and they were like, yeah, well, here's the deal. I drive down, I see my team, and I go home. Like, that's what it was for Colorado State fans, Air Force fans, Wyoming fans. And they realized, like, people weren't really staying in Denver. Some didn't really want to go. Utah was in the conference at the time. They didn't really want to go. Vegas was where they wanted to go. They wanted to go to Vegas, so they moved it back, thank God, and all of a sudden the crowds came back because Vegas is a great place to watch a college basketball tournament. The SEC tournament is here, used to be here in Nashville for years and years and years, and now it's in Tampa. Tampa's a beautiful city. I love Tampa, but Nashville with Broadway and the music, this is where you want the conference tournament. Location, location, location. Make sure it's a good place for fans. We'll see you tomorrow. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.